The Athletic.
Hello, welcome back to 1874 on The Athletic, a podcast all about Aston Villa Football Club. I'm Dan Bardell, joined by The Athletic's Aston Villa writer, Greg Evans, to talk through a very, very strange and busy week in football. And right now, you can subscribe to The Athletic UK for a special price of £3.99 a month for 6 months. That's 40% off the full price of a subscription. You'll enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all our podcasts, including this one. So go to theathletic.com/villapod to take advantage of this special 40% discount. That's theathletic.com/villapod. Morning, Greg. Back from Villa Park last night, and as I said in the intro, what a week it has been for football. I don't think I've ever known a week like it in my time following the sport.
Yeah, morning, Dan. Absolutely, an unbelievable week. So I'm so tired, I'm exhausted. It's just been a crazy, crazy few days. I mean, anybody who works in the industry will know just how mental it has been. The Athletic has been absolutely all over the story from the moment it broke on Sunday, right up until now that we're recording. So proud to work alongside some of my colleagues this week who have, broken some unbelievable stories, really brought home what's been happening with the Super League, the plans, the inside stories on meetings and what's going on in the Big Six, what's going to happen next. If you can't get excited, I know it's probably the wrong word with everything that's gone on, but if you can't get excited about what has happened this week, as a sports journalist, then, you're in the wrong industry. So I've loved it. I've also been very, very tired. I'm looking at you now. I could hardly open up my eyes. Last night was another late one. I think I finished up about 4:30. So, getting back up. We're now recording at 8:00. So I'm not as fresh as I usually have been. But look, it's been a mad week, and we're all hoping that the right outcome has now come of it. And that this Super League will not be taking place.
Yeah, the games have almost been a sideshow this week, like a separate event. It's not often that the games are played and that they're not the main event, but that's exactly the way it's been, especially when the Big Six have been in town playing the teams, and Villa obviously will come onto the game last night. Just before we do, we just mentioned the subscription offer at the top end of the show. What have you been up to? Obviously, myself and you did an interview last week with Stephen Moore, which we both really enjoyed. What else have you been doing except for writing about the failed Super League?
I've taken a bit of a sidestep away from Villa this week and focused really on the Super League, and term I had to what's been going on in the so-called Big Six clubs, trying to support some of my colleagues in that. We put together a huge story, really, just explaining, the inside story of the Super League, how it came about, what happened, the real timeline behind it, what the other clubs think, what happened in the Premier League meeting with the other 14 teams, and just what's going to happen next. And I mean, read through it again last night, and it's like, it's the most detailed, unbelievable piece of journalism that I think, I've ever been involved in. So if any of our listeners haven't read that yet, go and read it, and it will just fully explain everything about the Super League, every angle from every club, what it means for going forward for every single club, really. It's an incredible piece of journalism and put together by about 15 or 16 of us. So that's what I was working on earlier in the week, Dan, and then obviously building up to the Man City game. I have to admit, watching the Brighton and Chelsea game was just so, so strange. I had it on in the background and I was making calls to, various people in football trying to find out what was happening with the Super League proposals. And then, kind of watching that Chelsea-Brighton game, it just felt like, I just can't explain what it felt like. It felt like we were just not in the middle of a normal season. It was like something,
Well, we're not anyway.
Yeah, I know. Look, I know it's been the strangest season ever, hasn't it? And that was just like the pinnacle of it all for me. I just thought, what the hell is happening here? What is going on with our, with our game? It was just, mad. And then to be at Villa Park again when, you know, the dust had almost settled a little bit, but still didn't quite feel right last night at Villa Park. It felt like there were, you know, other pressing concerns that need to be addressed rather than the actual game. And then, you know, Villa obviously going and losing didn't help things either.
No, we went to see Stephen Moore, didn't we, last week? That was a good piece. Podcast's not out yet, but your written piece has gone out. It was very, very good. I really enjoyed reading it. Obviously, I was there when all the questions were asked, which isn't always the case for your articles. But just what a great guy and what an honest guy as well. I think we both said after we'd done it, usually ex-players and stuff, they go around and they'll blame other people for things that have gone wrong for themselves. But he very, very honest and basically put it all on himself, didn't he?
Yeah, extremely honest. You know, I think I said to you after the interview, didn't I? I don't think I've interviewed certainly a Villa player who's been so honest about his career. You know, whether it be a good or bad career, and look, you know, I think Stefan was honest in himself and said that he felt that he got all his future moves, didn't he, just by having one good season when he was 18 years old, which, you know, is quite a shame, and I think doing himself a little disservice because he did have a career for himself. It wasn't as good as he would have hoped. And yeah, you know, incredible honesty for him. And it was hard to put all that in however many characters you get on Twitter these days and try and explain it. So really looking forward to hearing some of the feedback from the podcast, because as enjoyable as it was putting the written piece together, the podcast is where it really comes to life, isn't it? Because, you know, you can fully understand and you know, hear the emotion in his voice.
Yeah, we'll let subscribers know as soon as that's out on social media. Hopefully it won't be too far away.
Brought to your ears by The Athletic, I'm Adam Hurry, and Football Clichés is the podcast you never knew you needed. Every week, to quite unnecessary depth, we examine the words, the phrases, the accepted wisdom, the mannerisms, the habits, the gestures, the symbols, the sounds, and the smells that everyone takes for granted in football, but which really are the glorious glue that holds it all together. For example, have you ever really listened to the Football League goals roundups? I mean, really listened to them? Because they all sound pretty much like this. Team X went into this game with just one win in their last 13, and when Team Y took the lead inside 4 minutes at Stadium Z, the home fans were probably starting to fear the worst. But Striker A had other ideas, and this game turned on its head in the space of 5 minutes midway through the second half. First, a smart finish from the edge of the box brought Team X level, and he repeated the trick on the hour mark to bring his tally for the season to 22. By now, Team X were in the mood, and although Striker A squandered a gilt-edged chance to complete his hat-trick, on-loan Dutchman winger B made it three with a curling effort from long range. Team Y's misery was compounded in stoppage time when midfielder C's late challenge on fullback D saw them reduced to 10 men. An afternoon to forget for manager E's men then, but Team X will hope they have finally turned a corner under caretaker boss manager F. Listen to Football Clichés wherever you get your podcasts, and also ad-free when you subscribe to The Athletic.
Let's go to the game then last night, Greg. Villa, I mean, what a 20 seconds. Unbelievable 20 seconds. Some of the best 20 seconds of football I think I've ever seen at Villa Park. But then from then, just a bit stale. And I know it's Man City, but Villa are the masters of their own downfall in some ways. And the game just got away from us a little bit. Things went wrong, but that 20 seconds, Greg, what a start.
Incredible, really. I mean, Dean Smith spoke in the lead up to the game about uncertainty, you know, use that word a lot of times in football, and that's what makes football so great, you know, when he was addressing the Super League proposals. I don't think he would have expected the chain of events that unfolded at Villa Park, you know, John McGinn scoring the quickest goal in the Premier League season. It was a lovely move from Villa, and it was the only real bit of enterprise they sort of produced all game. They were so boring to watch after that. They were so safe. They were so stale, so flat. Okay, I know it's Manchester City, but I just feel like this team is on the slide now, unfortunately. And it feels like all the good work that they put in at the start of the season, they're now undoing it because then they're not giving it a go, are they, Dan? We spoke about this after the Liverpool game. We felt that there were areas where they could have exposed Liverpool and they didn't. And I felt the same against Man City last night. On the face of it, two defeats against Liverpool and Man City is not a problem. Villa aren't expected to go and go head to head with these teams and beat them. But 2 wins out of 10 is a problem. And that's where why supporters are getting so frustrated now. You know, I'm reading the Q&A that we do in the Athletic after every game. And the fans are saying we're boring to watch. What's happening? You know, what's happened to this team? And, you know, that's the supporters' words, not my words. I'm watching the team. And my take on it is that it's hard to criticise too much on a season that has been productive and has had a lot of progress. If you look at where Villa were last season compared to where they are now, you know, it's miles apart, isn't it? That looking back at this time last year, we were worried that Villa were going to be a championship team. You know, I think me and you were describing them as one of the worst teams in the league. So they're certainly not at that stage right now. And over the course of the season, they've had a decent points return. But I totally understand where the supporters are coming from at the moment, because it's worrying watching Villa at the moment. They're not entertaining and they're not picking up enough points as they should be.
No, my main worry at the moment is that we can't seem to get the basics right. Passing the ball, I mean, it's not a good barometer to go off because Man City are obviously sensational, but, you know, every pass is fizzed. It's the right way. They move the ball quickly. We get the ball and we struggle with it. And that was not the case at the start of the season. I know Jack's not playing. I'm not going to get into that because we go into it every week. But you should be able to pass the ball with the right weight to your teammate. And at the moment, that kind of thing's just not there at all. And obviously, we can get a Man City because we did it after 20 seconds and got a goal from it. It's a great bit of thinking from Tyrone Mings. I actually think there was an underrated piece of movement in the build-up as well from Matty Target. It was obviously pre-planned because he kind of moved the Man City player out the way so that Mings could play the pass the way he wanted to play it. Watkins is, obviously, that's what he's done all season, just disrupted defences. And it was great to see McGinn on the score sheet. And then for that, maybe 5 minutes after that, I felt like, oh, we're having a go here. We really think we can unsettle them. But then after that, it kind of reverted to just, I mean, Man City are always going to have the ball. They're a sensational side. Foden was on a different level last night, on a different planet. So Man City are always going to be keeping the ball better than Villa. But they just dominated. We just sat back and sloppy goals, I kind of felt we conceded, especially that second one. It's a rare mistake from Martinez, in my opinion. But you go 2-1 down, and then after that, I don't remember Villa having a shot. And I feel like I could say that in a number of games in the last month or so.
Yeah, Dean Smith said after the game that he was the most frustrated with the way that the goals were conceded. And yeah, I can agree with him on that front. I think, you know, they were disappointing. Look, any goal's annoying, isn't it? But these two were particularly frustrating. But he also said that Man City for 30 minutes were the best. You know, he said the best he's ever seen for a 30-minute period. And yeah, I agree. They were unbelievable to watch, and they've got that in them to go and do that to a lot of teams across the country. But a lot of it was on Villa as well. They made it a bit too easy for them. You know, they were just sitting off. They were allowing them to come at them. Yeah, the crisp passing, you know, he's amazing, and Man City did that better than anybody else. But Villa needed to get in their faces, and I mean, they had the goal lead. You know, that they needed to do more of what helped them get into that lead. And I just felt that they sat back too deep. They allowed Man City to come at them. And then that eventually was the downfall. But, you know, Matty Cash, what on earth was he doing? I mean, somebody so calm, somebody so measured. I'm a little bit surprised, I'll be honest. I'm a little bit surprised at something like that. Not you know, necessarily two silly bookings when Man City were already down to 10 men. But something of that nature hasn't occurred earlier because he's 23 years old, a young lad, in his first season in the Premier League. He's had a great season. So for me, it was always expected that there was going to become a game where he did something wrong. And it just so happened that it was on this occasion. And Dean Smith really let it be known, you know, his feelings. He was absolutely furious with him because that was Villa's best chance of getting something against a team that they can't ever get near to.
Yeah, I mean, the John Stones sending off is a stonewall red card. I'm not sure what Pep was so upset about. It's a definite red card. It's a high challenge. Once you connect with the player at that height, you're always asking for trouble. And it looked bad slowed down. And to be honest, it looked bad in real time as well. But that's the disappointment from last night, is that at half-time, Keenan came on. We went 2 up front and you thought, right, we're going to have a go here. The man advantage, this is a good thing for Villa. This is a chance to go and get something from the game. And we never really got to see that materialise because of the cash sending off. And I thought he was one of our best players in the first half, if I'm being honest. I thought he had a great first half. He was tough down that side against Foden, but I thought he dealt with what came into his areas very, very well. But it's just a rush of blood when you've just been booked. It's a bit of a needless challenge. And then once the Man City have gone down to 10, you're always going to pick up a second yellow for a challenge like that. And from then on, Villa found it very, very difficult. And we're kind of playing this hybrid weird three at the back formation with Target at left centre-back. Barkley's come on. Smith's stayed with the two up front. But we never threatened them. The only chance I can remember in the second half is that Keenan Davies header from a corner. I can't remember anything else. And Man City kind of just saw the game out comfortably, didn't they?
Yeah, it was just frustrating that Villa couldn't really get at them, wasn't it? I mean, I think Dean Smith made the right substitutions at the right time. You know, he brought Davies on. I was really excited to see how that those two strikers up front really, really gave something for Man City to think about. But I think they had just 11 minutes, didn't they, with the man advantage, with Cash getting, two bookings in 3 minutes. And then it weren't the same. I think the game kind of got very stretched, didn't it, after that. Both teams looked a little bit tired. You know, Man City have obviously come on the back of, defeat in the cup. And we're looking ahead to the League Cup. Pep Guardiola described this particular game against Villa as very dangerous, which made me think that Villa missed an opportunity more than ever, because even when it was at 10 men, they just didn't do anything, did they, Villa? They passed it around the back. I know it's hard to break Man City down, and I know it's hard to get possession back off them when they've got it. But when Villa had the ball, they just didn't do anything with it. They didn't try and break the lines. They didn't try a creative pass. It was just so basic and boring. And you just thought, there's no way they're going to get through here.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
We lack ideas at the moment. Again, we're obviously going to mention it. Jack's not there. It's a big, big problem for Villa. But he needs people to step up in that situation. And it feels like since he's been out, nobody's really taken that mantle. I'll probably exclude Ollie Watkins from that because I think he tries hard. Sometimes as a striker, you're only as good as your service, and it's not like he's getting a bucket load of service. It's not like he's missing chance after chance everywhere. You know, I think he's doing the best with what he's got. Generally, we defend well still, but you look at the midfield again, and it's not right. That whoever plays there, whatever we do, it is not right. And I think Villa now are going to realise they need some serious surgery on that midfield in the summer. And I don't think maybe 2-3 months ago they'd have been planning for something like that.
Yeah, we've been saying this for a few weeks now, haven't we? They've got six midfielders and you don't know the best three. I think McGinn always gets in, you know, even though he hasn't really been doing it himself. I think the last few weeks have been more promising for him. He got a decent assist against Liverpool. He got a good goal yesterday against Man City. That will give his confidence the boost. I think if he has the right players around him, you see the real John McGinn again. I think he's been a little bit let down by those around him. His attacking position has been sacrificed because they're trying to get Ross Barkley in the team when he plays. He doesn't do enough for me now. I've seen enough of Ross Barkley now to realise that he's becoming a bit of a liability for Villa. He's not helping out enough as he should, really. Whether that's impacting on John McGinn, I don't know. I feel like Douglas Luiz hasn't quite... isn't producing the levels that he was at the start of the season. So does McGinn feel like maybe he's having to take on a little bit more responsibility? Mm. I don't know. And I think, you know, he'll have to put it on himself a little bit. You know, he'll probably admit that his performances haven't been as good as they have been previously, but we're at the stage now with John McGinn where we're always expecting him to rise and get better and better, aren't we? Because from the day he's come to Villa, he's been so good and constantly on the rise. We're always expecting more and more of him, but he needs a bit of support around him. I think that there are players in that midfield that can be taken out to help John McGinn. I think if you take John McGinn out, then that midfield looks even worse. Jacob Ramsey, come on, and okay, he won the foul. It was his foul that obviously led to Stones' red card. But we're still waiting for that blockbuster performance from him, aren't we? You know, look, he's a young lad. It's great that he's in the team. I'm all for him. I think he's got the potential to be a good player, but at the moment, he's not making the midfield any better than it is.
No, it was great to see him again on the score sheet last night. I know you mentioned previously he's got an assist in the game before as well, you know, so he's back on the board. He's getting assists. He's getting goals, and hopefully that continues on Sunday against West Brom. But I think you've raised some good points there. That stuff I'd not really, really considered. If the midfield's struggling, it's going to be very hard for him. He can't do it all on his own. No, Jack, I think he is a fantastic player. I think he's been a great signing for Villa. Unbelievable presence in the dressing room as well. What a guy. You just look at him and you laugh. And we need him back to his best. And he's somewhat getting near to that in the last few games. I suppose we're getting an assist and getting on the score sheet. But Villa have got to get that midfield right, because I think that's the main reason we're floundering at the moment. The defence in the main is still doing the job. The goalkeeper, he made a mistake last night. He's still very good. Ollie Watkins, you know what he gives you. It's that bit in between all of that that's just not right at the moment. And that's what Villa need to rectify, because otherwise the season is going to completely peter out. Let's just touch on the West Brom game then on Sunday. It's suddenly a game that I'm a little bit concerned about. I wouldn't say West Brom have the momentum, but West Brom need to win. If they don't win every game now, they're looking like they're going to be playing Championship football next season. But they've won their last couple. Whenever I've watched them actually recently, they've been pretty good, kind of doing all the things at the moment that we're not. They look a danger going forward. The midfield's got a nice balance to it. And it's a worry for Villa taking them on Sunday, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, West Brom are almost playing like Villa were at the start of the season. They're keeping it quite tight at the back now. And look very, very exciting going forward. And the issue I'd say with West Brom still is that they're creating a lot of chances. And okay, they've scored 8 in the last 2, which maybe goes against what I'm about to say, but they're very wasteful in front of goal. And I think that the quality of their players, you know, they could still have 4 or 5 good chances against Villa and potentially not score. So that might work in Villa's favour. But big game for them tonight, obviously, against Leicester. You know, if they go and win that, then I think Villa would start to become a little bit more concerned, because, you know, there would be some real momentum there, 3 wins on the bounce. And regardless of whatever happens, you know, in the Leicester game, West Brom would go into Villa knowing that they need to win regardless to save their season or keep their season going. So be an interesting one. Yeah, you know, I think there'll be a bit of revenge there as well, wanted because of the way that Villa absolutely destroyed them at the Hawthorns. You know, I mean, it was for me watching on that game, I thought that was Villa's most complete performance. You know, they absolutely never looked like losing or drawing that game. I think West Brom's expected goals was 0.02, which, you know, says it all, doesn't it? But it's quite a contrast, really, isn't it, when you think of that Villa team compared to the West Brom team. And the two teams that will be facing each other on Sunday. Very, very different game now.
Yeah, I feel like every time I watch West Brom, they win. So I'm definitely not going to watch them tonight in the hope that they lose some of that momentum coming to Villa Park on Sunday night. Just touch on team selection. It feels like there's not really much Dean Smith can do at the moment. His hands are tied a little bit with the team. Do you think it'll be the same kind of team? Do you think Al-Ghazi will come in for Ramsey possibly? That's probably the only change he can make.
It's hard, isn't it? It's like we're looking at that bench now thinking, you know, what can he really do to freshen it up?
No cash either.
Yeah, I didn't think of that. Yeah, of course, yeah. So, look, Al Mohammadi comes in. I don't think defensively that makes much of a difference. I think Al Mohammadi has, he's shown he's quite reliable over his Villa career. Harvey Barnes gave him a tough outing, didn't he? When he came in for that first game back, but don't think he'll be up against players of that quality. You know, probably looking at Matias Pereira and Callum Robinson, who are good players in their own, but not quite Harvey Barnes level. So, yeah, I don't see it being too much of a problem Villa defensively. I just think that attacking areas need to be freshened up, and there's nothing really that springs to mind now. Is that Trezeguet is out, Sanson will still miss the game, Grealish is obviously out. Do you go with Keenan Davis up top and try and change things? I'm all for that, but I don't really see Dean Smith doing that from the start. I don't think he believes in it. I don't think he really likes that system. And okay, it was unfortunate that Davis only had 11 minutes as on a team that had a man advantage. But in all honesty, did he do anything after that against Man City? Did he make much of a difference? He didn't, and he had 45 minutes to show it. Again, it's against the best team in the country, so mitigating circumstances. But, you know, these are the chances that he really needs to take, and probably didn't, did he?
No, I'm to be honest, going back to the right back situation, I quite like to see Kessler given a game. Elmo's not going to be here next season. Kessler looks to me like he's ready. I mean, obviously Dean Smith and the coaching staff will know whether he's ready or not better than I do, but I just think we've got nothing to play for now. So maybe blood a couple of youngsters, give Kessler a go. Let's see what he's all about. If that feels like a decent game to put him into for a one-off, in my opinion. But yeah, we'll see what Dean Smith does. We'll see if he does make any changes on Sunday. Let's go back to the Super League. We just wanted to play the Dean Smith press conference because we thought what he said was so, so bang on the money. So for those who haven't heard it, here's what Dean Smith's opinions were on the proposed Super League.
First and foremost, for me, I've got total sympathy for the six managers whose English clubs are involved in this, having to front up to the media. You know, and from what I've learnt so far, they haven't been involved in any decision making or any part of the process so far that their clubs have entered into. So I've got, you know, a massive amount of sympathy for them. Where I stand on it, I'm deeply, deeply saddened by it and disappointed, in all honesty. There's been some strong statements, I think, that have come out already from clubs within the Premier League and England itself. I think the one thing that, if I look at it, I was born in 1971, 50 years ago. And at that time, Aston Villa were a third division club. 11 years later, I watched them lift the European Cup, which is the pinnacle, which is now the Champions League trophy. And that was the dream. They earned the right to do that by winning the league the previous season. And while I understand that competitions evolve, I liked the European Cup being the winners of the leagues and the UEFA Cup being the other four and then the Cup Winners' Cup. But it changed, and I understand that, and it needed to because of the finances that were coming into the game, and the Champions League and its format, probably needs to evolve now and change. But to then create your own Super League where, from what I've only read the statement, that there's no promotion and relegation, and it just totally baffles me because it actually takes away the competition for people to go and reach that Champions League final. I dreamt of becoming a Premier League manager. I'm doing that now with Aston Villa. My next dream is to break into that them Champions League places and challenge again for Aston Villa. If this format goes ahead, this concept, which, I've seen it stated already that it's being made for the good of football. For me, it's not the good of football. It's totally a commercial venture. Football and sport in general is about competition, and this is not competition. When you have six clubs out of England joining a European Super League, and they're called or so-called the Big Six. But when the Premier League was formed in 1992, I think it was the Big Five, and Everton were part of that. Everton are suddenly now not part of the Big Six. Why? What defines the Big Six? Is it the history of the trophies you've won? Is it your fan base? Is it the size of your stadium? Or is it your turnover? And it's a question that's gone on and on for years and years. And the one thing that for me that has always stood out, in sport, there's never been certainty. If there was, you would never get what was a brilliant Liverpool team get beaten by Wimbledon in the FA Cup final. You would never get Leicester City, who get promoted, nearly get relegated, and then win the Premier League the following year. You don't get that unless you've got competition. This idea, this concept, takes away the whole fabric of sporting competition. And for me, it's a total non-starter. And I don't know, maybe owners at the moment are looking at the league table and not liking the fact that West Ham United and Leicester City are in the Champions League places at the moment. And ourselves and Leeds, who have recently been promoted, have got ideas of trying to become, you know, Champions League teams, as have Everton, as have Leicester, Wolves, all the other teams who are in the Premier League. You know, who says in 10 years it's not a big 12 or a big 14? You know, and that's why for me this is an idea that has to be stopped as soon as possible. I've been involved in professional football for 34 years and I've never seen anything that has brought so much of the football family together as they have been vehemently against this proposal.
So Greg, what did you make of that from Dean Smith? Very, very impassioned and obviously talking about his own aspirations for Villa, the club's aspirations. The Super League thing was an absolute joke, an absolute travesty to football. But what did you make of Dean Smith's opinion?
Yeah, well, I was in that press conference and, you know, I could see his facial expressions and the way he was delivering his message. And it's quite unlike him to go, you know, in such depth. He was sickened by it, you know, genuinely. He was so frustrated, you could see. And I think he said that he's been in football for 37 years and he's never known anything like it. So, yeah, I shared his pain, you know, because I've grown up as a football fan watching, you know, watching the teams in England, watching youngsters have their chance in the FA Cup against these big boys, and watching teams cruise through the divisions and try and take on the big boys. And, you know, Wimbledon was a classic example against Liverpool, you know, in the FA Cup. And obviously what Villa are trying to do now, you know, they've transformed themselves from a Championship team into a team that is now going to challenge for those European places, you know, in the future. There's a plan at Villa. They believe in the plan. They feel like they're closing the gap on the so-called top six, which, as Dean Smith said there, you know, how do you define the top six? Arsenal, Villa have beaten them twice this season and they're ninth or whatever. Tottenham, they haven't won anything for a long time. You know, what right have these teams got to be classed as elite? So, yeah, I shared his pain and I enjoyed listening to him.
Yeah, really good to hear from him. And to be fair, the football world has really pulled together and it has been a great show of togetherness and spirit to try and get this put in the bin. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, I don't think anyone could believe the audacity of it. I spoke to a couple of professional footballers when it was all kicking off and they just couldn't believe it. That professional footballers aren't consulted about stuff like this. Managers who are the figureheads at the clubs weren't consulted about it. It's just greedy, mindless owners that haven't got a clue about football in this country. All they care about is the pound signs in front of their face. And it was just a crazy time. And heads are going to roll and heads should roll in the bigger picture.
Yeah, well, this is it. You know, there are going to be innocent people probably that lose their job because they're going to be associated with this. But think of this next Premier League board meeting when these top six clubs have to go back into with the other 14 and negotiate things. And look at what these other Premier League, look at what these clubs were doing. There's a Premier League reform on at the moment. You know, when Project Big Picture was going ahead, some of the clubs came together and decided to try and make things better in the Premier League and in the Football League system. Where you've got these other clubs thinking that they're elite and they're going off and having discussions about something else behind their backs. So it's going to be really hard for some of, you know, the other 14, as they're called, to welcome the others back in, because there's a lot of frustration there and a lot of anger.
Yeah, I mean, Sky are reporting that the other 14 are split on how to respond to this. They're kind of like saying that fines and point deductions, that's going to hurt the wrong people. I suppose it will hurt the owners, but ultimately it's going to be the fans and the players and the coaching staff who weren't involved that are hurt as well. That's the latest update as of Thursday morning. How are Villa going to respond to this, do you think?
Well, I think that they'll discuss it with other clubs first. You know, I don't think they'll be wanting to stand alone and be the pioneers in all this. They'll be discussing with the other clubs and deciding from there. You know, we know that Christian Perslow is very vocal in things like this. He came out and spoke to the BBC on the day. I think he was the first chief executive to speak out. So it was good to hear from him, you know, at that point. But as to what happens going forward, you know, it'll be a decision that he'll make collectively with the others.
Yeah. What would you like to see happen? As someone who spent the whole week thinking about it and writing about it, what do you think should happen?
Yeah, it's really difficult because I've spoken to owners, I've spoken to investors, I've spoken to players, I've spoken to managers, and I've spoken to staff around, you know, football clubs, and obviously lots of supporters. So you've got to hit the people that really, you know, deserve it the most. But at the same time, it's unfair on the clubs. You know, if for example, you know, it's not fair on Arsenal fans if their club is now hit with a points deduction, is it? Because what have Arsenal supporters done to deserve this?
You could argue that the teams that are financially struggling, that go into administration, that haven't got any money at all, they get fined, they get points deductions. So why shouldn't it happen to these clubs with absolutely crazy amounts of money already?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, there's that discussion and there was, you know, discussions between the clubs that these owners have acted, you know, in an irresponsible and wrong way, and there are now calls going forward for the owners and directors test to be extended. At the moment, you know, you're looking at things like bankruptcy and criminal records, but you've got to add more to that now, because can these owners ever go and manage another club again after what they've just done?
No, but the more I think about it after I've just said what I've said, look at Birmingham City. Look at, you know, they got point deductions. They've got probably the worst owner in the country. At the moment, they've had points deductions, they've had fines for things. So it's what's the difference? And these clubs can afford to pay it quite comfortably. There's no difference. The Blues fans didn't deserve that.
No, I know, but I mean, it's a different.
Still been a bad owner. It's in a different way, but it's been being a bad owner. It's not. It's doing things that you're not supposed to do, and that's what the Birmingham owner has done.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's different for me. I think that there, you know, that you've got to look at each case individually, and for me, that's different. But you know, it's a whole other story if we're going to go down that line.
No. I just think if they're not going to deduct points, I've got annoyed as we've done this podcast. If they're not deducting points from these teams, they should never deduct points for anyone. In my opinion, now that's what I've come to. What's the difference? There's no difference.
Strong opinion. I'm not sure I share it, but I haven't got the right answers. I mean, either. You know, I haven't got a solution for it. It's for the executives to decide, isn't it?
Yeah.
What they push and where it goes from there. But you know, I it's just so hard. It's so difficult to know what is the right way to sanction these people.
Yeah, I mean, it's not over, is it? It's going to be a story that rumbles on for weeks and weeks. The league's not happening in its current format at the moment, but there's going to be fallout for this for months now. So it's going to be one to keep an eye on.
There needs to be an independent regulator, you know.
Gary Neville's been saying that for a long time.
You know, that a lot of people have been saying that for a long time, Dan. You know, people want to see football cleaned up, and if there was an independent regulator there, then things might go forward, but we're no closer to it.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Before we go, Greg, we finish with the top three. And this week, I think it's the top three bad decisions. Is that right? That I've been tasked with. So the top three bad decisions of Villa in the Premier League era. It's quite general, but obviously there's been a lot of bad decisions this week in football. So we thought we'd run with that. In number three, Greg, I've gone for I'm going to blame my old pal John Gregory here. Villa not buying Robbie Keane when they could have done that first time, not wanting to spend the extra 500,000 or million pounds, whatever it was. He was just a sensational player, a player that was a great striker in the Premier League for a very, very long time. And Villa could have got on board with that early, but they didn't want to pay the money. John Gregory decided not. And then we had him on loan anyway, about 20 years later. I can't remember how many years now. It's about 10 to 12 years later. We had him on loan at the tail end of his career, and he was still very good then. So yeah, I think that's my number three. Not getting Robbie Keane, not getting on the Robbie Keane train at the start when we could have done.
Yeah, I mean, you know, John Gregory's gone into a lot of detail about why he didn't sign, didn't he? I think he went to a fair few games and watched him and just never quite seen it in him. You know, he wanted to see something in him but didn't see it. And I suppose, you know, if you're a scout, okay, he was the manager, but if he's going to scout a player and he doesn't quite see what he's going to bring, then you can half understand. I think he said he went and sat at Molineux, didn't he, in disguise, and during a pre-season game, and Robbie Keane didn't do anything in front of him. Then he went and watched him again, and he didn't do it, and he just didn't bother with it then. And obviously he went to Coventry. I think Coventry were willing to pay a bit more money, weren't they?
Yeah, I think so. I think that they paid it, didn't they? I think Villa ended up getting Benito Carboni that season for the rest of the season. He turned out okay for that 1 year. It's just a follow-on. I feel like he could have been a great player for Villa for years.
Yeah, I totally get that. Yeah, I mean, you know, what Keane did in the Premier League, and obviously we've seen him when he came to Villa, didn't he? I remember those couple of goals at Wolves as well. They were fantastic.
Yeah,
one.
Great player.
And Villa was certainly into almost every transfer window that went past. They tried to sign him, didn't they?
Or we were linked with him, certainly.
Or at least were linked with him, yeah.
Number two, I've gone with something that you've wrote about in depth in the past, the Moscow debacle completely derailed Villa's season. Villa on course to qualify for the Champions League, of course, play the kids in the reserves in Moscow, lose the game, and then don't win the game after against Stoke, blowing a 2-goal lead. And then from there, Villa's season just completely derailed. I think we ended up finishing sixth, didn't qualify for the Champions League, never have done since. A bad decision from Martin O'Neill. Really, really bad decision.
Yeah, a bad decision. That was the story that sparked a very angry phone call from Martin O'Neill as well in my direction.
I love that story.
Probably learned a little bit along the way. I probably should have called him in advance and got his side of things before writing the story. But no, my decision was to speak to all the players from that team and find out what they thought about, you know, the Moscow debacle and whether he should have played the kids or whether he wouldn't. And again, you know, it's worth going and having a read at that, because you literally get so many different points. Gabby Agbonlahor backed Martin O'Neill and said that he should have done that. He said, because we were all dreaming of the Champions League. We didn't really care about the Europa League, the UEFA Cup as it was then. But whereas others, I think Stylian Petrov said, we should, you know, I wanted to play, I wanted to continue in this competition and just keep playing us. We were ready, sort of thing. So, yeah, an enjoyable one putting that together. It was about a year.
Probably, I think it was about the time we spoke to Curtis Davis, wasn't it? And that was probably a year ago.
Yeah, amazing how quick time goes, yeah.
Well, hopefully Martin O'Neill hasn't got my number, because I've labelled it as the second worst decision from Villa in the Premier League era, so I don't want any angry phone calls. Number one, Greg. Gone for the hiring of Alex McLeish, a genuinely nice bloke, a really good guy in football, but it was just a terrible appointment. And it also just made no sense whatsoever to go from the model they had under Gerard Houllier to then jump with the players that they had to Alex McLeish. It made absolutely no sense whatsoever. The fans never wanted it to happen. It was always going to be a one-season thing. It was never going to work out long-term. And it was just a really bad decision. And then from then on, Villa just crumbled down the Premier League, really.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, you have to say it was a bad decision. Villa certainly thought it was a good decision at the time. You know, they felt that Alex McLeish was the right man. You know, what you say, I think everybody in football shares that. A really lovely guy. You know, I got to know him well at Birmingham and at Villa, so, and still speak to him, you know, now and then from time to time now. So, but it didn't work, did it? And it really turned the fans against the club at that point. And then Randy Lerner just really did start to lose interest after that. So it was just the catalyst, really, for Villa's downfall.
We said last week Randy Lerner's recruitment strategy for managers at that time seemed to be, who does one of the best managers in the Premier League think we should have as the manager? He went to Ferguson and Wenger for advice. And it's fair to say they didn't dish out the best advice. to Aston Villa Football Club. I think that does us for this week, Greg. You go and get some sleep. You look absolutely shattered. Been a busy week for you and all the football journalists, all the athletic journalists. So I credit them with all the work they've had to do this week, because there's been some great stuff, and I've literally spent the week glued to the Athletic and reading what's going on. So fair play to everyone, because there's been some great stuff on there. Thanks to everyone for listening as well. We haven't done any questions or anything this week, because it's been a pretty fast turnaround from the game against Man City last night. So we'll be back asking for your opinions and questions next week. Have a good weekend. We'll be back after the West Brom game at some point. Make sure you check out Greg's Stephen Moore piece as well, because it really is a great read and something I was obviously involved in myself. And make sure you're watching out for that podcast as well. We'll update you on social media as soon as we know when that's coming out, because that's a great listen as well. Have a good weekend. Take care. Up the Villa.
Athletic.